I'm going to start with kind of three apologies, really. I guess one is that what I'm going to do is to try and speak about the media itself. So I come to this this work and this research as a photographer, and I'm looking at the photographs. I'm not looking through the photographs, but at them. Yeah. So that's quite. And so in some ways, you know, I can tell you and elaborate on the stories behind the photographs, but I'm not going to be doing that this session. And I guess the second apology is that I'm not going to be able to show you very much of my multimedia work. I hope to kind of get through and show you some slides, but I won't be able to show you the kind of the extent and the range of my practice in some ways, and that's perhaps another opportunity. And I guess the third apology is that I'm not necessarily going to locate it only specifically within an Indo-Trinidadian or an Indo- Guyanese sense of the word. I'm going to look at the analysis of photographs in relation to the colonial plantation worker and then look at the specifics that address Indian and indentured imaging, really. So I'm concerned with the image and the presence of what I term the Trinidad plantation worker. And I guess I'm concerned with three things. I'm just going to go through three slides that actually might help to kind of situate the way in which I'm thinking and the way in which I research and come to these images. The first is a quote from a notebook of my research practice. The second is Mrs. Prokop's family relation, a photograph that I took when I visited her home. And the third is a Kodak negative holder found amongst the box of ephemera in Port of Spain. So just to go back to the first quote and to say, research work of other references such as photographs, theses and other miscellaneous items meant I was referred to an old index cabinet outside the main door of WISC, and most of you will know where that is. That's where Professor Samaru is often sits regularly. The index cards bore evidence of reuse, additions, changes in referencing, amendments, handwritten and typed adjustments. The photograph section was an indexed as a separate section in the library's collection and occupied at least four wooden drawers. So it kind of, for me, it was about encountering the archive, encountering the way in which I find these photographs in some ways. And I guess it is actually about a kind of a research that's more self-reflexive in some ways. So it's thinking about the way in which we engage with the archive and the very nature and language, if you like, of the colonial archive in that sense. The rewriting, reinscription on the index cards themselves comes to mind. And so I'll just stay there for a minute. These photographs are found in the location of the post-colonial nation of Trinidad. They are secondary, less cared for things, it seems to me, miscellaneous items and in the margins. They also form part of tomes of international and haphazard traces of the past evidential colonial documents. The diary acknowledges a research as a lived and effective practice, and as Bergen, McGrath, Foster, and others remind us, as objects in relation to a viewing subject, where the photograph acts as an interface or mediation of social acts and cultural knowledge, and this practice reveals ways in which meanings are made. And it also suggests that it may be found that we might think about the extension beyond the frame. So we might think about the photograph in its location of where we find it and the limit of the image, and may be informed by prior knowledge, if you like, brought by the researcher. So I'm very aware that I actually am very familiar with looking at images and what I then bring to that. Mrs. Prokop's mother, this framed photograph of Mrs. Prokop's mother hanging on Mrs. Prokop's wall in Port of Spain was taken by me in 2006. As Burton reminds us that such archive material are not limited to official spaces or state repositories. So I guess what I was doing by looking for the photographs of the colonial archive was looking for where those places are, where you can actually, how you might think about the notion of the archive and where you might find and recover such archive material. They've always been housed in unofficial sites and may be associated with particular informal locations, curatorial practices, and places of publication and circulation. This photograph of a photograph shows it's surrounded by others, family members, to form an intricate web of relations on the wall of Mrs. Proclop's modern apartment in Port of Spain. It is the family album writ large and a personal archive on display. The photographs are enshrined on the hallway of the apartment, arranged as a memorial on the wall. You could say they function as a wider social antidote, signifying a particular era, social class, and community. The photographs connote a restitution process, a valorizing of the subject in the image, and presenting a way of looking up to the image of the plantation worker and their descendants. And for some of you will know of Mrs. Prokop's family, and she did the research of her own family in relation to the history of the plantation. And lastly, the Kodak negative holder, which I found amongst the boxes of ephemera in colonial Trinidad. It was given to me. And to me, it's the photography in colonial Trinidad was bound by an international Kodak's global and commercialized reach. So it seems to me that what I started looking at was the way in which Kodak actually was affecting what we actually were photographing and how Trinidad was being imaged. It also signifies the way in which photography was associated with a middle brow art, to use Bourdieu's expression, in which taking photographs was associated with gentrification, urban living, and sophistication, whose practices were aimed at and available to the privileged, Europeanized plantocracy of the colonies. So you get the idea in the image, of course, is the garden, the bird box, the pram in the park. So these are kind of very alien kind of images, if you like, that are actually located and part and parcel of the archive in Trinidad. By looking at the next body of photographs, I explore the way in which the photographic techniques and practices constitute the Trinidad plantation worker, and to explore ways in which racial demarcation and hierarchies of color and race and color created by the practices of the plantation space itself became integral to visualizing the plantation worker and the way in which space and location reinforce subjugation of the worker. And many of you will be very familiar with these kind of images that actually form part of the colonial archive. We may read the image thus: a copy of a photograph taken using a large format camera, original, not in the archive, of two plantation-owning families and what we assume to be their domestic workers on the porch of a plantation house. Trinidadian historian Brereton reminds us that the ruling Anglo-West Indians of Trinidad believed that being Anglo-Saxon, they had a divine right to dominate any country that they found themselves in. We can assume that this photograph and the next closely associates the colonial ruling ideology with photographic technology that confirms their status as elites, landowners, businessmen, and colonial administrators. Sorry, this thing keeps slightly moving here. The photographs signify an absence and a repression of the plantation worker. And Foster describes this as a form of cultural preparation in which primitivism serves as a metonym of imperialism and therefore operated as a process of disavowal and suppression of the colonial subject. And I'm thinking also of the notion of the swagger portrait that Pinney talks about in terms of talking about the Victorian family portrait, if you like, that you can kind of see traces of in this image. So the black women are presented as domesticated servants, transformed from their previous primitive state, who are continuously within the plantation owner's field of view, to be controlled and kept an eye on. The visual reference of repression is provoked. Their status is marginalized in the image, their apparent subservience to the family members reinforced by the two younger women holding the jug and tray. It relates to pre-photographic symbolism of servitude to signified wealth and luxury. I'll just move on to the next image. The pay table at Perseverance Estate, which again comes from the collection at the album at the University of the West Indies, why does it keep doing that? The plantation space becomes the primal scene of colonialism, as Hall and others suggest. The plantation house becomes the site of supreme dominance of the plantation owner, and the plantation factory signifies the labouring machine of order, commodity, and hierarchy. This picture asserts, I would argue, asserts a direct correlation between plantation work and economic value. This is the representation of mass labour as an amassed series of bodies and objects rather than individual identity status. They become the backdrop to an elaborate signification of the racial and hierarchical status of labour formed by the plantation system of production. There is no animation or excitement registered in the image, but more like a suspended and poised referent about a monetary exchange about to take place. Its stillness may signify the apparent promise of a monetary transaction. The poised status of something about to take place evokes and heightens the tension of the image. The colonial transaction is racialized and gendered. The binary black and white racial divide of European owner or possibly manager in hat, jacket, and with a pocket watch, and the worker of African descent are in the central focus of the image. The European plantation owner-manager dominates the photograph as his body posture demonstrates a confident control of the situation, reinforced by the dog. The European plantation owner-manager is positioned squarely to face the camera, and his directed gaze holds the attention of the viewer camera position. 1891, the period in which the Indo-Trinidadian formed the significant workforce of the plantation, we see in the background. The women, always seated, covered face to the left and in relation to the level of the dog itself in the frame. Many of the Indo-Trinidadian men standing, and what we might consider to be the overseers or foremen standing in the vantage position behind. So I just want to show you the two images of photographs of the indentured labourers gathered in the depot in Nelson Island. And I won't go into the details of, you know, how that, of the history of that, because I'm sure many of you are quite familiar with it, and Professor Samaru would obviously be able to elaborate on that if we needed to. The next two images seem to belong to a formal state of practice of photographic documentation. Here we see photography being formalized in the colonial process itself as a contribution to the colonial governments and an institution of regulatory control. And we may recall the analysis of this practice by theorists such as Edwards, Sekula, Willis, and Williams. The documentary image of colonial Trinidad contributes to the wider regulatory and controlling body of knowledge, which Foucault suggests each society deploys. So I'm arguing that photography actually, in this instance, is then used and coincides with the bringing of the Indian population into Trinidad and how photography was used in this way. Just as the new labour system of indenture signalled a different type of labour condition for the plantation worker, so the photographic practice of the indentured worker signalled a different type of colonial photograph. And this is what I'm arguing, is that actually the moment of the indentured labour system and tied in with the development of photography and the expansion of photography and the way in which the Indo-Trinidadian was then pictured through the image and presenced in Trinidad. There was a fascination of the culturally and racially marked difference, capturing the exoticized image of the Orient, resulted in a significant body of photographs of the indentured laborers in Trinidad. What is most significant about the photographic representational practice associated with the indentured laborer was the photographic style employed. The photographic intervention was not necessarily used as a direct form of regulation. That visually contributed to an identification and regulatory process for the arrivant. It's much more sophisticated. And you can see, I mean, again, looking at these images, there's kind of the rows of faces, nameless faces, if you like, in large numbers as well. Let's see the other thing. So I just want to move on to the postcard, the Michael Goldberg collection, briefly, to talk about and elaborate on and extend the ways in which the colonial photograph and the right to look is adopted, it seems to me. And many of you might know of the Michael Goldberg collection that actually is in the West Indiana Special Collection in St. Augustine. But photographs' emergence and proliferation coincides with the notion of imperialism as a particular period of colonialism. It's the ideology of the imperial ruling classes in the very same period that the first substantial freedom movements were developing in the country, in the colonies. The more vocal the latter, the more bombastic the former, as Young suggests. It seems to me that there's two comments I want to make about these images as I show them to you. The first is to do with the way in which photography is associated with the imperialist impulses, including to map and survey the other, as well as projecting spectacle, titillation, irony, and commodity propaganda. Photography emerged as a mode of communication for developing capitalist world order, and the notion of universalizing discourse and language was integral to this approach. Photographic practice was a contributive part of the imperial attempt to unify the globe and equally become associated with the myth of universality of photographic language. Taylor notes this was a photographic confirmation of its own image, reinforced by looking abroad and finding the same values reflected back, if you like. So the central idea, Taylor argues, was to define Englishness as a reliable make or made in England, whilst reasserting the certainty and surety for the continued safe economic trade between the European centre and the colonies. So I'm arguing that actually these images, it seems to me, are contributing to this kind of observational gaze that becomes normalised, if you like. And Taylor rightly argues that the amateur photography clubs in England and in the colonies were important to developing the photographic practice of a universal language. So this parallel language of photography at home and abroad promoted an idyllic and familiar appreciation of unspoilt landscapes and exotic, proud people. This, he suggests, effectively normalized the condition of commerce and travel and showed the real material benefits of governing and being guardians of colonial populations. Or, as Light argues, the empire was no longer the site of adventure and conquest, but had simply become abroad, remaining exotic, while at the same time being reassuringly familiarized. So the commercial postcards of the collection appear as representations of everyday occurrences in which the photographer seemed to have happened upon the colonial plantation worker as he or her goes about their daily business. The postcards contribute to the normalizing and naturalizing tendency, transparency of photography as part of the truth apparatus that rehearses that what the real world is like. I just want to move on to showing you really some other photographs that I collected, and just to suggest a kind of a different way of thinking about the photographs, of finding photographs in Trinidad that were actually contributing to a kind of different moment, if you like. So these next few slides are from various private collections and form significant additions to the colonial photographic archive, as I would argue, counter-narratives, intimate and personal objects of memory, and similar to Mrs. Prokop's photograph that I showed you earlier, if you like. So the unnamed, unknown, undated image of the Trinidad woman of African descent is visually symbolic and informed by the immersion discourse of black nationalism and the freedom movement. While the postcard images were photographed as if stopped by the cameraman to capture an image, these portraits suggest a process of negotiation between the sitter and the cameraman. In this one, the backdrop, posture, lighting, and formal dress indicates an amount of preparation, thought, and planning that has gone into staging the photograph. The photograph of the black figure signifies a notion of pride and dignity in her stature and composure. The sitter has posed, or has posed herself, with her upper body slightly turned, her face and gaze directed straight at the camera, photographer, viewer. There is no smile to indicate it in either eyes or lips, but a rather a calmness and confidence. The portrait composition commands the attention and respect of the viewer. The photograph becomes her object of memory. The private commercial photograph becomes increasingly accessible to the colonized subject, who are now able to enjoy and exercise a degree of control over the way in which she is represented in the image. The photograph had become an inscription of social identity for the colonial worker, conferring his or her status in Trinidad. Photography provided the place where the colonial worker was able to visualize his or her presence, as well as producing a lasting memorial object that could be repossessed and treasured. So I just want to conclude by showing you some of the way in which I actually work with some of these images and the acquisition of these images in the archive. And to think about, you know, the way in which I'm kind of interested in the way in which imaginative, in a similar way to the way we're listening about the novels, in a similar way as a media artist, I think about responding to and thinking about and reflecting on these images and of the objects themselves. And so I produce multimedia work that is informed by and influenced by the existing archives. I create works that are based on contemporary photographs, sound recordings of interviews, ambient sounds, notes based on the research visits. So it's actually, you know, moving, it's one step removed from that kind of historical legacy and thinking about a more poetic and imaginative and creative space to it. Do I need to finish now? Yeah. I argue that photographs' agency and function in imperial discourse, having been used in the language of the empire, meant it was unable to fully become associated with the freedom language of the other. And so I guess what I'm trying to do is to re-evoke a kind of a different narrative and a different story. So I aim to show a responsive and reflexive practice of exploring photography in the plantation worker subject that challenge this notion of evidence and differentiates a range of practices associated with motivations for ruling, dehumanizing, restitution, and creating memory objects. So it's a post-colonial exploration, if you like, that I'm trying to achieve. And these are, I'll just end on that one. I mean, this is part of a shot from the installation that I did of a multimedia piece where you actually work with the stones in order to hear stories from those images. So I'll leave it there and hopefully we'll have some questions. But thank you. Thanks very much.